But when you're taking a risk like this and you bomb, then it really sucks, right?
Get ready to be empowered, because we're going to launch into this new school year next.
And now it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep.
First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education information like no
other. We are so excited today to have on Mr. John Spencer with us. He's a college professor out of George Fox University in Oregon. He is the host of the Creative Classroom podcast that I personally love listening to, and I recommend it to all my teacher friends. And he is also an author. He's written two books. One of them is called Launch, and the other one is called Empower. Thank you so much, John, for joining us on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So why don't you just get us started with a little bit of a big idea on your two books, Launch and Empower, and then we're going to talk more deeply about your book, Launch. But give us the synopsis of each one of your books.
All right, so I'll start with Empower. Empower is kind of a fun book. These are both books I co-wrote with A.J. Giuliani. And our most recent one was Empower, and it kind of began as this idea of, you know, what does student-centered learning look like? You know, for them to ask the questions, own the assessment process, own the creative process. What does it look like to really embrace choice and voice through flexible systems? And the fun thing about Empower was we went totally different with it on the visual style. So if you check it out at some point, it just looks different than a lot of education books. I did a lot of the drawings for it, and you know, there might be a single sentence on a page, there might be a bunch of kind of sketch note page, there might be, you know, things like that. And so even though it looks thicker, it's kind of a quick read because we really wanted it to be visual. And then the other book is Launch, and that is about this launch process that we'll talk about. And it's really about using design thinking to help students with their creative work. And so Launch stands for specific things. The first part is look, listen, and learn. That's kind of where you start with some kind of awareness that they have. It could be empathy, it could be a problem to solve, it could be a scenario. And then they move to a place where they're asking tons of questions. That's kind of an inquiry phase. Then the U is understanding the process or problem. And that's where they kind of engage in really practical research. So it's not too structured of a research process. The goal there is to kind of have a bigger worldview, a deeper understanding, more prior knowledge, all that kind of stuff. And then they move into navigating ideas, and that's where they're brainstorming and deciding what they're going to create. They kind of create an initial plan. Then the C is where they create. That's where they're actually making what they're making. And then the H is where they highlight and fix. That's where they're revising their work. And then once they really feel like it's done, the key last phase is that they launch it to the world. So they launch it to some kind of authentic audience. And so that's the launch process.
John, is there a better target age group for this? Or do you see this happening from K through college? Let us know.
I love that question. You know, I got to do some work with a first and second grade classroom that was using this process. And that was really cool. Although, you know, they simplified certain pieces. So research for them involved talking to experts. It involved, you know, viewing some videos. It wasn't just, you know, what maybe a high school teacher would think of as research. But I actually think it was in certain ways really, really authentic.
Like those seeds of research, right?
What was that?
It was like the seeds of research.
Yeah. But it's also how we do research, right? If I want to like figure something out, I might read a book on it, but I very likely will also go look online go contact somebody that I know who is an expert on it, right? I mean, those are, you know, watch a YouTube video. Those are also ways that I do research. When I didn't understand terms in my, starting my doctorate, but I didn't understand what certain terms meant, I looked online, and one of the places I, you know, one of the things I did was I looked at YouTube videos for a doctorate, which is embarrassing.
Nothing wrong with that.
You want to tell me, you know, like this piece of stats that's, you know, like, I don't understand how to find the p-value. Well, the video is going to show it to me better than reading about it. It just does. So,
John, that was very transparent. We appreciate that.
So I guess to answer your question, like, yeah, at the younger grades, we've seen it. And then we've seen, I'm working with a middle school where they're redesigning a couple of their elective classes to incorporate design thinking. I've seen it with high school students. So I really do think it's pretty K-12 friendly. It just is definitely going to look different. The other piece I want to say is I never, even though it's something we share in the book and it's a process, I don't believe that the process is more important than, you know, like I don't know what I'm saying. I guess teachers know best is what I really believe. Like, if you learn the design thinking process and then someone tells you you're doing it wrong, but what you're doing is working for your students, then you're not doing it wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I really believe teachers know. They are content experts, but they're also kid experts. And that's way more important than being a process expert.
Well, and that fits your book, your other book, Empower, which is student-centered, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're being student-centered, then you're not going to be married to the process. You're going to do whatever's best for those kids in that situation that year. Hey, can you tell us, like, you mentioned, you know, working with the middle school and redesigning what they're doing and using this design process. Can you give us maybe a story or an example of what this would really look like in the classroom? An example of a project maybe that some kids are working on or something you did when you were in the classroom doing design thinking?
Yeah, so couple examples I would give just to show you how vastly different it is. We use the design thinking process in social studies to do our documentaries. And there's a great teacher out there. You guys should have him on your show at some point, Trevor Muir. And he used it to do these really cool World War II documentary project. And it was amazing. I mean, all these former soldiers they interviewed, they had a red carpet event at a movie theater. It was powerful. It was really cool. But that would be like social studies. We used it in math when I had students design tiny homes. You know what tiny homes are, right? They're like,
oh yeah, I watch the DIY channel. Yeah.
You've seen those, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they had to design their own tiny homes, and we tied it to the standards on surface area, volume, and proportional reasoning. And so, you know, I mentioned that because those are two vastly different areas. We used it for our service learning projects and everything from designing solutions to social problems to how we ended up painting murals on campus. I mean, all kinds of stuff. So it really is, I would say, like subject neutral.
Now, when you teach the design process with kids or when you encourage teachers to use it, do you want them to explicitly teach the process to the kids? In other words, do the kids know I'm on the L step now or I'm on the C or whatever, and they have that process kind of ingrained in them so that they can apply it elsewhere in their lives? Or is it something that a teacher just kind of guides them through and it's a little bit more flexible and so on?
Yeah, so for me, I always liked letting them know. But I also liked to let them know about the scientific method, the publishing process. They were all, you know, I felt like anything that you would, any kind of process you could use outside of school, you know, a project management process. I mean, so I liked teaching processes, but I also would really emphasize to students that it was okay to move back to another part of a process or to skip something if it just wasn't working for you, or to speed up on a part that you felt like you just wanted to move into this other piece. And so, you know, I did teach it to them, but I never, you know, I never like graded them on alignment to the process or something like that. Because it really was about, you know, I see the launch cycle as a framework, but the beautiful thing about frameworks is you can modify them, right? You can change them and make them your own.
Hey, John. So to the teacher that says, I have too much content that I have to get through, what do you, besides saying, hey, you're not student-centered, besides saying that to them, what would you say to kind of move them towards a process like this? Because I know people feel trapped by the pacing guides and by the content standards, and you want me to go paint a mural? Like, I don't have time for that. When am I supposed to put that kind of stuff in?
Definitely. And, you know, like painting the mural is a great example of like, I didn't have time for that. We did that after school, you know. I had to be careful about how my time was being used. But, you know, I'll give it, you know, the tiny house project. We had 4 weeks to cover proportional reasoning, volume, and surface area. And those were hard concepts. They were actually the hardest concepts. So we did it in 4 weeks using the design thinking process. The key thing is it wasn't something that was adding to my plate. It was rearranging my plate. Wow. And that was, I think, the difference. It was a lot less direct instruction. It was a lot more students figuring things out, practicing it, seeing it in a real context. You know, the other fear that you know, for me, the time factor was a fear that I had. The most dominant fear was the test, right? Like, what happens if they do poorly on the test? And when you're using the district curriculum and you bomb on the test, then you can just blame it on that. But when you're taking a risk like this and you bomb, then it really sucks, right? And so you want to avoid that. And fortunately for me, I mean, you do. Like, fortunately, yeah, totally. You were at the top. I mean, they did really well on the test. I can't promise that design thinking will lead kids to have better test scores. But in general, it's the same thing with student-centered learning, right? In general, there's this fear that if they own the process, they'll score low on tests. And then the teacher that's doing a bunch of test prep is going to beat you. But in my experience, this is a little off topic here, but we looked at the math and the reading tests in both cases. And the teachers that had prepped for the test like crazy, their classes did beat me in the first 15 questions. But then after that, they had this massive drop. So when I let my kids just do free reading and read whatever they wanted, they ended up building a ton of reading endurance, right? And then they outpaced over the course of a test, they beat all the other ones. The same thing was true of once, in the case of the math, once they moved out of the algorithm and into the word problems, my students were actually able to solve word problems because it's not the words that confuse them, it's the context. Well, if they've been playing around with these concepts inside of a context, it becomes a lot easier for them. So, you know, I found that it really was about reorganizing it.
And really the emphasis, I believe, in a good classroom. One thing that drives me nuts is that, like, people that are so into direct instruction.
Wait, there's only one thing that drives you nuts?
One of the things that drives me nuts.
This is what happens when you do a show with your brother.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I believe in direct instruction, but I'm more worried about the character of my kids. And in a classroom where it's just basically a bunch of direct instruction, the kids don't really have an opportunity to develop that character. And yeah. So what you're describing right here is a situation where kids are going to get more than just the content. And that doesn't show up on the test.
Yeah.
But it shows up in life.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, when they have determination, they're able to like find workarounds for things. Like,
well, and I think that's like, you know, just from listening to your guys' podcasts before, I think we all kind of share a really similar, I guess, philosophy of what learning is all about, you know? That's where I think there's sometimes a disconnect, though, is you ask people, what do you want kids to become when they're adults? And, you know, you'll hear lifelong learner. I want them to be democratic citizens. I want them to be empathetic. I want them to be creative. I want them to be critical thinkers. These are the things you hear them say. And then I would just ask, like, then what is your approach that's leading to that? Because if the approach is just section reviews out of a textbook or lecture, chances are you're not leading to any of those things.
Good chance, right?
Yeah, good chance. I mean, it's not rocket science.
Hey, John. So as a teacher, we have to sell these concepts and these practices to a parent community that's grown up in a traditional style. Mm. You know, what we all see is what we've grown up in education. How do you, as a teacher, communicate this clearly to parents so that they understand the kind of learning that's going on with their kids?
Well, for me, I think, you know, I would always, in the case of design thinking, I would just get into the fact that it's used all the time in the quote real world, right? Like businesses use it, entrepreneurs use it, it's used in social and civic spaces. You know, I learned about design thinking, oddly enough, my intro to design thinking wasn't in the arts, or it wasn't in engineering, or it wasn't in all these places you always hear about it. It was actually working in college for a faith-based nonprofit, and we used design thinking for program review. So that tells you just how broad it's used. And so I guess broadly it's used, right? Got to get those adverbs correct. So, you know, that was my intro to it. So when I talk to parents, I explain, you know, this is used all over the place. The other thing I get into is, and I use this metaphor of, when I was a kid, there was a formula that worked. You went to school, you followed the rules, you went to college, and then you climbed a corporate ladder. Now, we still want kids to go to school. We still want them to go to college. But when they get out of college, they're not going to have a ladder. The ladder's gone, and in its place is a maze. And so how are they going to navigate that maze? And I think that's where creativity, critical thinking, those things come in. And so when we engage in this conversation about what the maze looks like, a lot of the parents are able to say, yeah, you know what? I've already had to change jobs 4 times because things are different than they used to be. Or, yeah, my job requires me to work collaboratively with people all over the world. Well, exactly. You know, so you start having these conversations all the time, and that's where they realize, oh, okay, this is actually important. You know, I personally think that creativity is vital in and of itself, right? In the same way, and I know you guys are passionate about this too, play is vital in and of itself. You shouldn't have to sell these things.
No.
You do. And there's, I know I'm seeing the t-shirt, but there's great research on how play impacts creative thinking, right? We know this, and how that impacts innovation. So, you know, if we can, you know, speak the language of what parents care about, which is that they want their kids to grow up to be okay, right? Safe and secure and all those things, then it's really not that hard of a sell.
John, you have so many good things to share. And I just want to tell our audience that, you know, John might find this hard to believe, but I'm almost old enough not this part. I'm sure they don't find this hard to believe. I'm almost old enough to be John's dad. I was a senior in high school when he was born. But I am so inspired by you. I listen to your podcast religiously. You have so many great ideas. Like every time I've listened to one of your podcasts, I walk away with a great idea or inspired. And I just really want our listeners to know that they need to go listen to John's podcast. It's The Creative Classroom. Subscribe to it. Don't be fooled by, and John, don't take offense at this, but some of the titles of the podcast I would read and I'm like, well, I don't need to listen to that one. I already know about that stuff. And then I would go listen to it. I'm like, oh my gosh, he came up with something that's just blowing my mind. That's brand new to me on this. So please, folks, go check it out and learn more from John. But John, we are going to kind of switch gears with you right now and play a little game, if you don't mind.
Yeah, you bet.
Awesome. All right. So Mr. John Spencer, as I'm sure you're aware, you are not the only John Spencer on earth.
All right.
Okay. So today we're going to ask you some questions about some other less important, of course, John Spencers. We're calling our little game, Dear John Spencer. Scott, why don't you tell our audience who Mr. John Spencer will be competing for today?
Well, John Spencer, you're going to be competing for Paul McGuire He is a elementary principal in Ottawa. If you're able to answer two out of the three questions correctly, then Paul, he'll be able to give this award. Well, he'll bring kids into his office, obviously, and listen and sing along, right, Tim? To this ridiculously popular edgy-rock band, Rockin' the Standards.
Why do I laugh at you every time when you say
that? I don't know.
You said it like 300 times.
Every time I do say it.
Okay. All righty. So, John Spencer, here we go with your first question.
All right.
Have you heard of the actor John Spencer?
Yes.
Oh, you have. So this might be a pretty easy one for you. Well, unfortunately, he passed away in 2005. Uh-huh. Which of the following TV shows was John Spencer last known for? Was it A?
Mr. Spencer played the White House.
Leo McGarry in The West Wing. I'm a huge West Wing fan.
Oh, we didn't have to give him the choices. What in the world? Okay, well, forget
I
that one.
The rules there, but I was like, oh, I know this. Okay.
He's more professional from us here at the Best Brothers podcast.
He knows that one.
Have you guys ever seen that show?
So if you didn't catch that, yes, he did play the White House Chief of Staff on NBC's The West Wing. You were a big fan of that show, huh?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big fan. It's not like Sherlock. Or I mean, there's other shows that are at the very top, but I think I watched every episode of West Wing.
We're going to have to scratch the second question now. Gee.
All right.
Okay. Well, you're on the right path here. Another John Spencer, question two. Another John Spencer was recently hired as an assistant coach of a professional sports team in Northern California. Kind of between you and us, right? Which sport is John Spencer coaching? Is it A?
Soccer.
Is it B?
Basketball.
Or is it C?
Football.
So your three choices are soccer, basketball, or football, John. No Googling.
My phone's right here. I'm not okay. Well, I'm pretty sure I know the answer on this one.
Really?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I think it's soccer. Am I right?
How would you know that?
Because, there you go, Portland Timbers.
Oh, you follow soccer. You're a sports fan of soccer.
But I think before I followed soccer, I think there used to be a coach named John Spencer who coached for either Portland or Seattle, either the Sounders or the Timbers.
Wow. You are good.
I'm like Cliff Clavin, right? Remember that? Cheers back in the day?
Absolutely.
How he would know just useless information.
All right. So question number three. Can you believe it that there is actually another John Spencer in this world? Well, this John Spencer is a professional featherweight MMA fighter out of England. Have you heard of this guy?
No.
You haven't? Okay, we finally found one.
Question number one. Just kidding.
All right.
Unfortunately, he's not such a good fighter. Which of these is John Spencer's professional record as an MMA fighter? Is it A?
0-12.
Is it B?
5-78.
Or is it C?
2-25.
Oh, God.
Okay, so pressure's on, Nod.
I'm going to get B.
You're going with 5-78. Well, that's not right, but that would be a really bad record. He's actually only won two fights, and he is 2-25. And the other weird thing is that every single one of his professional fights have ended in the first round.
Oh, wow.
He's never made it out of the first round, but he won twice in the first round. So,
yeah.
Scott, how did Mr. John Spencer do on today's game show?
John, you got two out of three correct, which is good enough to be a winner.
Woo-hoo!
Congratulations, John. You won absolutely nothing. But Paul, in Ottawa, he won Rockin' the Standards, rock and roll music for second through sixth graders. And it's rockalicious, right, Tim?
Hey, I like that new word. All right, John. Well, thanks for being a good sport and having fun with your name there. Can Can you tell our listeners how they can follow up and learn more from you? Because I can guarantee them that we are just barely scratching the surface of what they're going to want to learn from you. So let them know websites, Twitter handles, whatever.
Definitely. All right. So my blog, and this is also where you'll easily be able to find my podcast as well. So my blog is SpencerAuthor.com. So you just think author, that's where I write. So SpencerAuthor.com. My YouTube channel, where I make videos, I love making these like sketch videos, is SpencerVideos.com. So just think videos. And then I have a Facebook page that's SpencerFacebook.com. So you can remember SpencerFacebook.com, SpencerVideos.com, SpencerAuthor.com. You should be fine.
Hey, John, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and share. And we really do hope the audience like connects with you if they haven't yet and learns all the things that you're sharing, because it's really some amazing stuff out there.
Really, I appreciate that. Thank you. It's been fun.
Excellent. And Scott, why don't you remind our audience about what we're super passionate about, which we brought up a little bit earlier, Global School Play Day.
Yeah, if you've listened to the show at all regularly, or hopefully you're a new listener, we'll go check this out, globalschoolplayday.com. A group of us got together a few years back, actually about 3 years back, and said, hey, we need to do something about the lack of unstructured play in kids' lives. We saw the impacts. We heard Dr. Peter Graetz share about it. We saw research coming out left and right talking about the importance of unstructured play for kids. And we wanted to challenge, right, Tim? We wanted to challenge the world to say, hey, don't let them play at school. And so we said, let's bring this at school and see if anyone can stop us. And we've gone from a little over 60,000 the first year to over 280,000 kids playing in just the third year, with kids from 51 different nations. And we need 1 million kids this year, right, Tim?
That's right. So go and sign up. It doesn't cost anything. We're not making any money on anything. This is not a money thing. This is a grassroots movement to try to get kids out on the streets and playing, and in their backyards and playing and building forts and being creative. Right, John?
Absolutely. It's so cool.
Yeah. So we just, we're kind of daring people to say it's a waste of time to have your kids playing at school, because boy, play is educational. So go sign up and join us in our movement to bring unstructured play back to this generation of kids. Tell your friends about it, post it on Facebook. And thank you so much for listening, everyone. Go to iTunes, subscribe, give us a review unless you don't like the show. And we just really appreciate you listening. And so thanks for listening. And most of all,
thanks for listening.
My name is Ron Mom. Bradley.
And Dad.
So I could be one and of Dad.
Bedley brothers.
And Jana.
Yeah. Bedley brothers. Bedley brothers. Bringing education information like no other. Bedley brothers. Bedley brothers.